That's right.
Welcome to a new era of technological sophistication here in the recording tower at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, the third floor, high above the Techno Institute for Lutheran Confessional Theology and Good Time Exegesis. We are in Hebrews. Greek Club is in Hebrews. We started last week, and we made it through this titanically complex opening periodic sentence. And as I recall, we finished through verse 5, and so we will pick up at verse 6 and make our way through this lengthy string of citations from the Septuagint. You actually get a little flavor of, Septuagintal Greek here. Nothing too fancy. So we'll pick up at Hebrews 1, verse 6, which reads as follows, assuming that we have the established text correctly. Hatan de palen eis agage tan prototikon eis ten oikumenein lege. Kai proskinesatosan auto pantes angeloi theou. So the writer to the Hebrews, as you probably recall, he's now comparing the Son to the angels, right? And of course, the Son is—he's trying to show, by citing the Old Testament, which he's reading typologically and Christologically, that these amazing statements are made about the Son, which are not made about the angels of God. So we begin with a conditional relative clause or a temporal relative clause. Hatan is just hate. When plus on. So when and when again, eis agagein is just from eis ago. The third principal part of ago you might conceivably remember is agagon. So this is the aorist subjunctive in a hatan clause, active third person singular. And when again he brings or leads the firstborn. This is a kind of almost a title for Christ. St. Paul uses it a couple of times. The firstborn into the oikumene. Usually I think just translated world here. Sometimes it has the sense of inhabited world as opposed to the created order. But here I suspect it just means the creation. Right? He says, lege, and now quoting from Deuteronomy 32, as you can see from the side note. And now we have a very nice form, and somewhere in the deep recesses of your memory are the third-person plural imperative endings. Tosan is the third-person plural active imperative ending, and it's from proskuneo. It's a long word. See the proskunes? That's the eo, contract verb. You lengthen the epsilon to eta, add sigma, and you get the weak aorist stem. So this is aorist, imperative, active, third, plural. And the subject is, anybody? Pontes angeloi, all the angels of him, all the angels of God. So we do the let translation for third person, right? So let all God's angels pay homage to or worship him. Right? So that's the longest Greek word, actually, that I've seen in a while. So I feel good about that. Any questions about verse 6? Not too hard. Okay? Fantastic. I think it's the sophisticated technology that's bringing clarity to our discussion. So many thanks to Jonathan and Andy and all the guys down in IT. Verse 7. And now we get we have lots of mende in Hebrews. And so we get a mende construction. And first the men part, verse 7. Kai pros mentus angelus lege, ha poiontus angelus autu pneumata, kai tus liturgus autu pyros phlega. That's a great word, phlega. As English speakers, we might be tempted, and it would be permissible, I think, to translate this first clause, and on the one hand, men, to the angels, he says. Because the Gospels, you have Lego, followed by pres plus the accusative, and it can indicate just the indirect object. He said something to someone else. But I wonder if here, and I checked it out in the lexicon, pros plus the accusative can be kind of like with reference to. And I wonder if that's kind of what's going on here. So we'll translate it that way. On the one hand, with reference to the angels, lege, he says, or it says, now we've got a substantized participle from poieo, the one who makes, and this is referring to God, the one who makes his angels spirits. We have a second accusative after the participle poieo. And this would be, in Daniel Wallace's categories, an object complement, double accusative, the one who makes angels to be spirits. Okay. By the way, did I mention the YouTube video, All Things Are Better in Koine? This thing is hilarious. You should. Everybody in the universe should watch this. It's a bunch of Biola University students, apparently, who put together this contemporary Christian song called All Things Are Better in Koine. So go to YouTube and just type in All Things Are Better in Koine. It's about 4 minutes long. It's worth watching about five times. So anyway, there's a rap version of it where you have these chicks going, Daniel Wallace, Daniel Wallace, like that. So.
My friend would be in that song.
Yeah, okay, could be. Yeah, it's a great video. Okay, the one who makes his angels to be spirits and his liturgists, right? His servants, the translation there. And now you probably would have to look this out. Can anybody guess what the dictionary form of phlegma might be? It's a feminine noun.
Flogging?
Close. This is a hard one.
Flocks.
It's from phlox, which means flame. Okay, and then it goes to flux phlegos. And so the basic stem is phlug. Right? So, flames in the accusative of fire. And here we probably think of it's the seraphim, right, Tim? Seraph means to burn, right? Yeah, so maybe we have the seraphim specifically in mind here. So on the one hand, that's what he says about the angels. First of all, they're made, they're spirits, and they're servants, right? Granted, fiery servants, but they're just liturgists. They're just liturgeoing, right? And the contrast now in verse 8 falls on the Son. But let's see, any questions about that? Again, in Hebrews, it's pars or die, because you get unusual forms and unusual word separations, although we haven't seen too much of that here yet. Will, yeah.
Is that object complement double accusative, is that the name for the whole thing, or is that two synonyms for one thing?
Actually, in Wallace's sort of categories, there are different kinds of double accusatives. For instance, we'll see one here in just a second where you have a personal accusative and then an impersonal accusative. Where in English we translate one as the indirect object, Greek just gives you two accusatives. But the object complement is also sometimes, the terminology that I actually originally learned is that it's a predicate accusative. That is, you give the direct object, and then you just throw a second accusative after it, which predicates or says something more about it. And so you can normally translate it with putting the word as or a form of the verb to be in between the two accusatives. Yeah, that's a good clarifying question. So, and Wallace's grammar is widely used in. I like object complement because it's descriptive. The first one is the object. The second one is a complement of the object. Right? But there are different kinds of double accusatives. So if you had your Venn diagrams, you know, double accusative would be the big circle, and object complement would be a small circle within that. See? Now, this is pedagogy at its best, so don't expect much more than that. Okay? Good. Anything else? Verse 7. All right. Verse 8. And we'll go ahead and with that sort of accusative of reference translation in just a second on there. Pros de ton huion. Now the author to the Hebrews quotes Psalm 45 or 44 in the Septuagint. Hathranas su hatheas eis ton iona tu ionas. Kai he hrabdas tes euthitetas hrabdas tes basileas su. And maybe we'll just keep going and get that whole citation there. Agapesas dikaiosinen kai emisesas anamian. Diatuta ekrisense hatheasu elion agaliaseos para tus metakus su. But concerning the son, and now you can see the de of the men de, right? The men was at the beginning of verse 7, and now we get the de to complete the comparison. And now we get the citation from the psalm. The throne of you, and hatheos there is normally taken as vocative. The throne of you, O God, now we don't need a verb, is unto the age of age, or forever. And now a hrabdas is a scepter, okay? And the scepter of uprightness, or I think the dictionary also suggests righteousness. But euthus means straight. So straightness, uprightness, and so forth. The noun is euthutes. And then this is the genitive, this is feminine singular genitive. The scepter of straightness or uprightness. Or you might render it the upright scepter. Now, no verb, but we have another nominative, hrabdas, so we just supply is the scepter of your reign, your basileia. Right? And then in verse 9, we have two second singular indicatives. You don't actually see that much in like the Gospels, or it just looks like a funny form, but agapezas is just aorist, indicative, active, second singular. So it goes ah, as, eh, if you remember your weak aorist connecting vowel and ending. You loved righteousness, and, now this is from mizeo, which means to hate, and you hated lawlessness. Diatuta, on account of this, and now here we actually will get a different kind of double accusative. So ekrisen is from, anybody, what verb? Krio, which means to anoint. Right. On account of this, God, your God, it's the weak aorist, anointed se, you, there's the direct object. And now another accusative, elion, oil of gladness. So in English, we'd have to say something like, with the oil of gladness. But this is a verb that can actually take, elion could have been dative, I looked it up, but it can also be accusative here. So anointed you, and in English, with oil of gladness. And para plus the accusative can mean more than, greater than, your metakos is a compadre, right? It's a fellow partaker, that kind of thing. So these are the things that Psalm 45, which is a royal psalm, right, Tim? Is that right? And so reading typologically, Christ is the king above kings and the one who fulfills, you know, all Old Testament royalty, if we could say it that way. So the writer to the Hebrews applies Psalm 45 to Christ. And again, interestingly, he's showing just over and over again how much greater Christ is than the angels. So it actually would make this text a little bit challenging to preach, because that's not a big ticket item for most North American Christians, you know, that Christ is superior to the angels. And yet in the original context, it apparently was a very important issue. So good. Questions about, it's not too bad, is it? See, Septuagint? Okay. But if Dr. Seleska actually ever asked you to read the Septuagint with him in the summer, do it. It's a great experience. Yes, question, comment. Yep.
I hate bringing this up.
Well, don't hate.
Just witnesses, when they came and used this passage, they denied that the theos was evocative and said, no, it's a nominative with an assumed.
Okay.
So they put the in between.
Oh, your throne is God forever?
Yes.
Okay.
Just want your comment on it.
Well, actually, I have a very short and pithy comment. I can't remember all the arguments, but I can recommend a book, actually. And the book is by, The title of the book is Jesus as God, and it's by Murray Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S, Baker, published about 10 or 12 years ago. It's a great book that studies all the New Testament passages where Jesus is referred to as Theos. And this is hard. If you like Greek grammar, this is your book. I mean, it is really a very, very full and thorough study of each. You know, there's not that many times when in the New Testament Jesus is the referent of Theos. Most of the time it's God the Father, right? So, but I'm sure he has a thorough discussion of this. So it's a good question. I can't remember all the arguments. So. Yes, the name. That's okay. The name of the book, I'm very happy to repeat it, is Jesus as God. And the author is Murray Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S. First book I ever encountered where the guy said, okay, this is what it says. Now, if he had wanted to say this in Greek, this is what he would have said. You know, at this point, your knowledge of Greek is like a notch up, right? So it's a very, very helpful study, very careful and very thorough. So, to be honest, that's all I can remember. I can't remember all the arguments. So it's a great question. But okay, but concerning the Son, God is your throne, or your throne is God. See, he would say that they would probably want to argue something like that. Okay, the Son is the King, but God is his throne, and that would have to be some sort of metonymy or something. Yeah, right. So. Okay, good. And if you'd like to know what the psalm meant in its original context, Dr. Seleska, give him the mic, and he is off and running. But we are not going to give him the mic. He gets the mic on Thursday. All right, good. Good question, though. Other questions on verses 8 and 9? Okay, we'll just continue with the Septuagint then. Verse 10. Kai su kat arkas kyria tain gain e... Themeliozas, kai erga ton cheronsu eisen hoi uranoi. Again, nice short clauses, and to be expected, really, because when the Septuagint, Greek typically has short clauses Hebrew has short clauses compared to Greek, right? So, not too surprising. And you, now we have a citation from Psalm 101 in the Septuagint. And you, according to beginnings, Kyria, Lord, founded the earth, Themelio. So you can see the stem is Themelios, right, where you lengthen the omicron to omega and add the sigma. And then the augment is on the front, aorist indicative active, second singular again. You, according to the beginnings, Lord, founded the earth. And... works of the hands of you are... here's the subject. We know that this is the subject because it's got the article on it. So works is not the subject. Heavens. The heavens are the works of your hands. Right. Nice anthropomorphism there. Good. Pretty straightforward. Questions? Yeah, Will. It's because some linking verb sentences are not convertible. That is, you can't turn them around and have the sentence still necessarily either be true or express the same thing. Right. It doesn't necessarily mean that B is A. Yeah. And by the way, Daniel Wallace actually has a very nice discussion of this in his section under the nominative. I mean, it can actually be very important. So as a curiosity... does the end of John's Gospel say, well, let's flip there, John chapter 20. And an argument has been made either way. John 20, why are these things written? That's the question. John 20, verse 31. These things stand written, tauta gegraptai, in order that You may believe. Now, there's a variant there, whether it's a present subjunctive or an aorist subjunctive. Hati Jesus est in ha Christos ha huias tu theou. Now, is the goal to believe that the Christ is Jesus? In other words, the readers are saying, man, there's a Christ around here somewhere, but I wonder who it is. Or is it to show, okay, Jesus is here, who is he? What's his significance? You see, it's actually a slight difference depending on how you take the subject. And so there's actually a discussion as to whether the proper name Jesus is the subject or whether the article on Christ wins, as I like to say, wins the subject battle. Actually, Wallace would say the proper name, yeah, under normal circumstances, that Jesus is the Christ, right? So, yeah, so it does actually sometimes actually change the meaning of what you're looking for depending on what the subject of the linking verb clause is. Yep, so, because not all of them are convertible propositions, if I could say it that way. Good, good questions. You guys had your Wheaties this morning or something. Okay, good. We've got a couple of minutes left. Back to Hebrews 1, verse 11. More about the, continuing a citation, I guess, from the Psalm. Or maybe here, it shifts to Isaiah. Verse 11. Autoi apoluntai suda diamenes, kai pantas hoi hematian paleothesantai. And we'll keep going. Kai Jose peribalayan helixes autus, hos himatian kai alagesantai, sude ha autase, kai ta etesu uk ek leipsusen. So they, or maybe they themselves, talking about the heavens in the prior clause. Now, apaluntai, as you all know, apolemi is the verb from Sheol. It has two sets of principal parts. This is, I think, the future middle, and it has an active, normally an active sense, meaning not to be destroyed, but to perish. So this would actually parse as future indicative middle deponent or something like that. They themselves will perish, but you, diamenes, not too different from meno, you remain. By the way, if you looked at the variant reading, it would change the accent to diamenes with a circumflex, and that would make it a future. See? This, as it's punctuated here in the text, it's actually the present indicative of diameno. They will perish, but you remain, and all will grow old. Literally, will be made old. Palaiao. Future passive, but it has an intransitive active sense. All will become old like a garment, and Jose like a peribalion, a cloak. I suspected what this meant, but I had to look it up. Heliso means to roll up something, and like a garment, you will roll them up. Like a cloak, also, this is from Alasso, and it's actually future passive. It's a strong sixth principal part, alagain. And so if you take the augment off, it goes back to alpha. So alagesantai is actually the future indicative passive, and they will be changed. Same verb, by the way, as 1 Corinthians 15. We will not all sleep, but we will all be changed. Right? But you, ha'otase, you are the same. And the years of you, uk ekleipsusen, will not fail. Which is a kind of a nice God-centered, triumphant thing to say at the end. And this is all about the Son, according to the writer to the Hebrews. So, he's making the point how superior the Son is to the angels. And we'll do that one more time in verse 13. And then we'll be done and back into harder Greek, actually. So, okay, great. So, lectionary lunch tomorrow and Hebrew Club on Thursday here from High Tech Tower at Concordia Seminary. in St. Louis.
I can do it. Right there.